call the hearing to order. To my right is Senator Al Adams, Kotzebue, and Senator Jones from Ketchikan. I'm Senator Baker from Kena Peninsula. The purpose today is to hear what the folks say about HJR 13. What I would suggest you do is when you did give your testimony, we will ask questions maybe. There's nothing to put you on the spot or anything, but we may want further clarification on some of your testimony. Representative Copeland, you can join us if you want.
A little while.
Okay. All right. Okay. And I want to thank you folks for coming. I look out here and I see you have an event here. You have a sled dog competition in town, and to have anybody show up today is kind of marvelous. And we have an opportunity to be in Fairbanks, which is also nice, and we feel pretty good in our part. So we're going to start off with Jim Widener. Where do you prefer they come here?
Okay. I'm not here. Is this okay?
That's great. Sure.
Gina Hot Springs Road, Fairbanks resident. Phone number is 488-6366. And I'm one of the prime local critics of Governor Cooper's proposal here. My criticism falls in two general areas. Does the proposal have any technical merit? The second one is, does the proposal have education? In terms of technical merit, what effect does this proposal have on the permanent fund, particularly on the dividend program? Currently, for each $1,000 permanent fund earnings, we're spending $500 on dividends and $500 on inflation. If inflation goes to 6%, we'll only be able to spend $600 on inflation proofing, $500 or $400 on dividends. If inflation were to move to 7%, we would only be able to spend $300 on dividends, $700 on inflation. So on technical merit, the question comes, if right now we are spending $500 permanent fund earnings on dividends, $500 on inflation proofing of the principal. This proposal calls for spending $400 for the education. So bluntly put, the education lobby would have us believe that through creative math, the new math that's been taught in school for years, we can hack $400 million out of it, or $400 if we use the $1,000 event. So based on that alone, the proposal has no technical merit that I can see. Something that seems to be overlooked in this discussion is the size of the dividend checks relative to inflation. In coming years, it'll be necessary to double the size of the permanent fund principal just to make up for the effects of inflation. On the current principal of $10 billion. If we do not double the size of the principal, then the purchasing power of everyone's dividend check goes down. This means instead of buying $900 worth of fuel oil, food, services, or whatever, 15 years from now, it needs to be $1,800 to buy $900. This is because of the effect of inflation. The Commission on the Permanent Fund put out a little pamphlet showing the effects of inflation proofing versus the effect of non-inflation. Their pamphlet's quite right, and it confirms the standard mathematical analysis using the eighth grade math skill that we taught. So, inflation proofing, technical merit, I think this proposal falls very short. There's another proof, another little sneaker in here, section 17, I'm sorry. Back here on the back side, line 1 through, looks like 3 through 7. It's talking about appropriating lawsuit monies to this education endowment. I've talked to various folks that are concerned with this, and the range of settlements range from $500 million to $2 billion. So, maybe nothing, too. I cannot see a constitutional amendment playing this kind of crapshoot game. It's a gamble. If the $2 billion, if it turns out that $2 billion of lawsuit money is placed in the principal of the permanent fund, that makes a handsome increase in everyone's dividends. If it turns out that it's only $500 million, that makes a modest increase in the dividends to everyone. To go back to technical merit a little bit, one of the effects of this proposal would be deny people the individual freedom of choice as to how to spend their dividend money. It's my understanding from telephone calls and discussions with other people, there are quite a few people that now take their dividend money and spend it on education. Their own education, their children's education. Some people give it to charitable groups and organizations for educational purposes. So the way things are now, people use the money for education. I'd speak to a personal example. A few years ago, my wife had an interest in learning the piano. So she spent her dividend money on a tutor to learn the piano. So we have that situation of freedom of choice. This constitutional amendment would interfere with that. The second thing, rating under technical merit, has to do with the politics of constitutional amendments. If this is placed on the ballot just by itself, the campaign to defeat it would by definition be a negative campaign. Now, if this thing was placed on the ballot and you placed a constitutional amendment on there saying, shall 50% of the earnings of the permanent fund be used for dividends, rest used for inflation. You'd have two constitutional amendments. Those that are for this proposal to campaign for this one, the ones that are for the proposal which would continue the status quo to campaign for that one, then we wouldn't have to throw too many rocks at each other. But if this thing is placed on here, by itself, then by definition, negative campaign. Now, in the interest of the education lobby, is it worth the loss of credibility to gain a couple of $100 million in funding? Which is another issue of technical merit. The amount of yield off this education endowment, if it was constructed, $1 billion, would only yield $100 million in possible spending money. And that is if you do not inflation-proof the education endowment. If you inflation-proof the education endowment, then the yield for each $1 billion put into it is only going to be $50 million. So, if the education lobby thinks that it is possible to fund education for a scheme, no amount of mathematical shenanigans, new math, old math, or any old math is going to show that you can yield the kind of money that's currently being spent on education in the state. So that has to do with that. Now, Let's suppose that this thing were to pass. Or if it gets on the ballot, some of the questions that will have to be answered in here. And like I say, it'll be a negative campaign. There seems to be a couple of, or three serious myths of education that I thought of this morning as I came down here. The first myth of education is more money produces better educational performance. That is not documental. And I brought the committee a set of paperwork that I finally got out of the United States Department of Education. It took 6 months of haggling through Senator Markowski's office to get the stuff. And if we have some time, I would like to show, this is the paperwork for the committee, and you folks' files. They put out a large wall chart which summarizes some of the years abstracted from this packet of data. The packet of data goes back several more years, but the abstract is kind of shortened down. And the thing is difficult to understand. It's time-consuming to look through it. Complex. But one of the myths of education is the more money you put in education, the lower the dropout rate. So one of the columns that they have in here is the number of students graduating per 100. Like here we have the state of Alabama. They show that in 1987, 300 students starting in ninth grade, they had 70.2 of them get out the 12th grade. Now in 1982, the state of Alabama had 63 students going, getting out that went in. So they showed 7% increase in the period from 87 to 82. Sorry, from 82 to 87 is a little better spoken. We look in there and we see, gee whiz, the average teacher's salary. $23,000 in 1988. Come down here to the next state in alphabetical order, which is Alaska. Average teacher in 1988, $40,424. In 1982, we showed 64 each 100 students graduate. 1988, that increased by 2% to 66 students. This is the state of Alaska. So what we see is a relationship here. Teacher salaries, amount of money spent on education, doesn't seem to have much effect on graduation. That is contrary to what you folks are told day after day, and what the public is told day after day. The myths propagated. Well, that's one of the myths, and it's documentable from this information, and I certainly urge the committee to have your statisticians look that stuff over and go through for yourselves and see what you can see. Pick out another state. You know, a state of your choice, the state where you were born, the state where your wife was born, the state where your grandkids were. Pick out a state where your parents were born in, someplace you're familiar with, and look to see how those other states compare with Alaska. So we have a lot of folks here today, and I don't want to take up all their time, because they have some important things to say also. But I would encourage them, if they're going to speak on behalf of this thing, to clearly address this business of teaching. $1,000 permanent funder. Takes $500 for dividends, $500 for inflation. And that's assuming the annual rate of inflation is at 5%. If the inflation rate goes to 6%, 7%, we are in an extremely serious problem. There just was not money in the permanent fund to support this project. Second thing is, I would like for the folks that support this thing to hand you people a copy of their canceled check, showing where they have donated a portion of their permanent fund income to the public school system, K-12. I think if they think that this is a good idea, they should have contributed their money or their children's money to the public school system. After all, hey, it's a good idea, we'll give them some money. We'll help them out. So in conclusion, I want to thank you folks for the time to testify. It's been very short, 17 minutes. And I'll be happy to answer some of your questions on this if I can.
Senator Adams?
Yes.
Mr. Wagner, if the committee eliminated the funding source from the permanent fund earnings and just stayed in lines in the back page 327, from the oil litigation, whether it's $500 million to $2 billion, or some cap that's a starting point, would you be able to support something like that?
The appropriation of this $500 million to $2 billion, as I understand it, is money that would otherwise go into the principal of the permanent fund. And I wouldn't, under any circumstances, support that because, theoretically, it has a modest to a very significant impact on dividend checks, and that in turn affects the overall economy of the state, particularly rural areas. What I might suggest is that if the education lobby feels this thing has some true merit, that in the legislature, instead of appropriating $600, $700, $800 million to public education, so maybe chop that in half, put half of it in the education endowment, and give them the other half to live on. And then, you know, that might produce a little more interest in education, a little less interest in just throwing money down the drain. Like I say, statistical evidence supporting concepts that $800 million in the state school system has much effect on the quality of education is very, very modestly documented. And we should be doubled any other state being able, not just so that, I guess that's the answer to the question, but I really can't see siphoning off monies that would go into the principal permanent fund because that affects everybody. And $2 billion, the potential for $2 billion increase in the size of the principal permanent fund. That's a hell of a lot of money. I think that turns out about $200 per person in dividends. That's a quick calculation. Homemade calculator. It's $200 million a year yield, half of it for dividends, divided 500,000 ways. I think that's what I'm
saying. Any other questions?
I have two. What's your opinion on using public funds? Should this go on the ballot for voting issues?
Absolutely not.
None.
If you guys want to use public funds, then I want equal funding in the campaign. That's a damn thing.
Okay.
Fair is fair.
No, we've asked this, and I think the best answer came from a student in Sitka to say, well, if it's my side of the issue, it's okay.
Pretty well. So, if it's my side of the issue, it's all right. Give me about $2 million. I can match the NDA with that.
Yeah, we're talking about the governor spending the money. If NEA wants to do it, that's their own money. They can do it with or any other. Yeah, we're just talking state funds.
I would. The governor, so far as I can figure, spent $300,000 trying to promote these things. I figure some of that money is my dividend money that would otherwise be under dividend. Some of the dividend money has been appropriated to my general government. About $20 million of dividend money. I figure that's the amount that has been used or siphoned off to, for some of that money has gone into funding two state workers about $100,000 a head because this thing. If it's under, give me a second. We're going to be able to match the NBA about $2 million.
Any other questions. I want to walk to Representative Wilson to take you up a question.
Not a question, just a comment. I thank you for the wall charts. Of course, I realize these statistics can be used in any way. Massachusetts was 11th when they're spending about 2,800 and 3,100 on stat scores when they increased their expenditure to $4,505,000. They went to seventh place. They rode. Oregon was seventh place and they're spending $2,600 and they went up to 4,000 and they went to second place.
Well, we can pick a neutral state, South Dakota, and whatever way that goes, that's
right,
how everybody
can,
goes.
In other words, I can use these statistics to prove that spending more money will increase the tax score.
You cannot. Oh, yeah.
Now, that's the one that gets as good as the one you got.
The only thing, Neil, yeah, the statistics you gave me. Expenditures in this state has done is fatten the wages and fatten the retirement. We've got a $2 billion $3 billion.
What you spend the money for that counts and not how much you spend. Yeah. I agree with you on that, but not...
Well, I appreciate your efforts to take care of your campaign contributors. But what I would suggest that, as an observer in this, what increases academic performance is the attitude of the school board. If the school board cracks the whip and says, we want some results, have some results. If it's the attitude of the school board, we're going to hire all these people to piddle away money on all these programs, and nobody cares whether or not we have any results.
I suggest the attitude of the parents is a lot more to
it. Next issue that Representative Cohen brought up, is the issue of parents. For what we're spending on education in this state, there's only one source of the problem. It's the education lobby's fault. I'm not interested in being blamed for somebody else's inadequacy. I'm not the slightest bit interested in being blamed when some $100,000 or $120,000 administrator can't do his job, can't produce his results. There is only one fault. It's the school board's fault and the administration underneath it. The school board cracks the whip. When you have the school board taken over by people whose sole function is to increase their wages and their benefits and cut their workload, then education goes down here. And I brought up the other issues here. But while we're talking about it, the other issues on education is that, as I see it, if there was a black hole out here, I swear to God, the education lobby could consume the wealth of this universe and all the other universes that exist. When you look back in your encyclopedia to the history of education in the United States, it's very apparent as to what's going on. That in 1774 and 75, when we had the revolution over here, education was primarily a church operation, and the thing they were interested in teaching was reading. You didn't hear much about geography, you weren't interested in history, you weren't interested in math, you weren't interested in sexual behavior, you weren't interested in feeding the kids in school, you weren't interested in parking them in school with the buses, and so on. As the revolution progressed, there wasn't too much money for this thing. University suffered severely. They didn't have any money to run the university in 1776. After the revolution, people started promoting public education. The problem was funding. They started in on the property taxpayers in 1780 or so, and that is the way we funded public education. And every time we have expanded the funding, the program has expanded. More money, more program, another program, more money, and on and on and on and on and on and on. We started out to where people with a third grade education taught school. Then we moved to a time when the person with an eighth grade education taught school. Then it was a time when a person with a 12th grade education taught school. That was a time as 12th grade education and 2 years of teacher's college. They taught school. Now, We're up to 12 years of high school education, 4 years of teacher school, and they teach school. People are not happy, so now we have to have people teach school that have 12 years of public education, 4 years of college education, 2 years of graduate education, and now they are teaching. At the rate that we're going to go here, another 50 years, they'll be spending 30 years in school to be a school teacher. We can't afford it. And they're teaching the same thing. Parents can teach their kids if it took a little time to do the work themselves. Teach Johnny to count. 1, 2, 3, 4. And we have people with a master's degree teaching Johnny to count. We have people with master's degrees teaching spelling, C-A-T. Give me a break. Too much money. Too poor results. So the question is, put it on the ballot. Hell of a Donny book. It'd be an interesting campaign. I'd rather not see it on the ballot. If you want to put something on there, put 50% of earnings on there for the permanent fund. So for inflation proofing, 50% of dividends. Then everybody's happy. All those that want to spend it on education, write a check to the public school teacher of their choice. Money spent, and everybody's happy. Thank you.
Thank you. For those of you in the audience, this bill did pass, as you both of you probably know, the House. But it's going to take 14 votes in the Senate, 14 out of 20. And that's why we're going around today, because we realize that it does take 14. And there is a feeling that if there is something that goes on the ballot, there should be an effort made to put something on the ballot that has a chance of passing, instead of just throwing anything out. And there are those people, maybe you feel that way too, but if you do, let us know that, as is, just stick it on the ballot so people have something to vote for. But there are the other side, other folks are saying, well, maybe it needs to be cleaned up a little bit. And Representative Adams did, you know, come up with some kind of an alternate suggestion as to how maybe change it. My guess would be that the way it is right now, the votes aren't there. You know, I just don't see 14 votes exactly the way that's written. Other people can disagree with me, but I think we have extra time to get 14 votes. So it has to be looked at, and we're hoping that you also give us some ideas as to how to make it the best possible thing if it does go on the ballot. Okay, Jim Dugan.
Senator Fisher,
you're Irish, aren't you?
Well, it would appear that way.
Okay.
At least I'm telling everybody I am.
The name sounds Irish, I guess.
I'm unalterably opposed to this amendment, so-called education endowment, for several reasons. I was fortunate enough to spend 6.5 years on the city council of the city of Fairbanks, back in the days when the city councils had oversight on school district budgets. And I watched the progression now that the borough assembly has the oversight on their school district budgets. I was also fortunate, very much, to be a delegate to the Constitutional Convention that drafted the Constitution for the state of Alaska. And one of the things that was unalterably opposed by everybody, practically everybody at the Constitutional Convention, was the dedication of funds. And this is clearly a dedication of revenues of the state. And just, I know that you have all of these things available to you, but just to quote to you, in one Rocky Mountain state, the legislature agreed to only appropriate 17% of its revenues. The rest of the 83% of the revenues in that state are all tied up in dedicated funds. At the time of the Constitutional Convention, the territory of Alaska at that time had 27% of its revenues tied up in dedicated funds, and more was in the offing. And when you tie funds up in dedicated funds, it means then that the legislature doesn't have the right to appropriate money where they think it's necessary to appropriate it. I'm a person who believes that the school system should have every amount of money that is needed for the operation and maintenance of the schools. I am not one that would tell a school district, you prepare a budget and we'll just fund that budget the way you presented to us. I had a school board member tell me one time that it didn't make any difference how much money was in the budget that the school board presented to the city council. The city council was obligated to give the school board that amount of money, and if the city council then had to raise taxes to provide for the other functions of the community, the police, fire, and so forth, that was their problem and they'd have to face it. I don't believe in that sort of thing. I have never seen school districts short of the funds that they absolutely needed to operate the schools. And to me, the mark of a good administrator is to be able to function and function well within the budget that is allocated to him to operate. So I am opposed to dedicated funds because it's an evil that leads to other dedicated funds in the state of Alaska at some time in the future, if dedicated funds are allowed, would be in serious condition. I almost opposed the dedication of the funds as the permanent fund. But then in thinking about it, I thought, well, maybe this is one time that if Hammond is correct, that the permanent fund might reach the point where it could support the state government. Maybe it's worth it. But of course, as time has gone on, state government spending grows faster than the permanent fund will ever grow and get to the point that it can support state government in its entirety. The second place, the thing that appalls me is that the governor, in proposing this, and I've seldom opposed the governor in whatever he proposes, but the thing that appalls me in his proposal here and those who would advocate let the people vote is that the people aren't really being told the truth. They're not being candid with the people of the state. The Constitution clearly provides for schools, and that can be no equivocation about it at all. It says the state shall establish and maintain. Now, the Constitutional Convention spent a great deal of time on this, and Senator Coghill, a member of that constitutional delegation, really worked very hard in making sure the schools were going to be properly treated by the state at the Constitutional Convention. And before we get into semantics about whether it says shall or may, the Constitutional Convention spent quite a little time on those two words alone. They finally determined that if it said may, it was permissive. But if it said shall, and you can find it in the minutes of the Constitutional Convention, if it said shall, it was a mandate that the state will and has no right to do anything else but provide and maintain the system of schools. I'm a firm believer that the Constitution takes care of providing for the school system, and I'm at a loss to understand really why this amendment to the Constitution is provided, and I'm at a loss also in the matter of the subsistence thing. I think those things can be worked out without constitutional amendment, but I wonder, and when I don't have proper answers, when the governor says, the reason I'm proposing this is that when the oil revenues run out, this will guarantee that there's adequate money for the schools. Well, that's a bunch of hogwash. When the money for the oil runs out, taxes are going to support the schools. There's no equivocation about it at all. The taxes will support schools, will have to support the schools. And the thing that appalls me is that though he says, when the oil money runs out, he scares people into thinking that there's no other way that the school system is going to get money. Yet he doesn't say that even with this amendment, if adopted, that there will reach a time when taxes will also have to be part of the support of the school system. They don't tell the people that. They don't tell the people. People that are promoting, let the people vote. I don't have any objection to letting people vote on anything. I want them to be told the truth of what they're voting on. And they don't tell them that the Constitution adequately provides for the establishment and the maintenance of the school system. And it will be ever thus. And it will take a constitutional amendment to change that. And our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren will have long gray beards before the Constitution ever gets a change like that happening to it. You know, you can speculate a little bit about what is the reason for all of this. School lobbies have a habit of saying we need money for schools, we need money for schools, we need money for schools. And I think that it's been adequately pointed out that money isn't the cure to all of the ills of the school system that we have now. That some of the other ills of the school system need to be addressed by things other than money. But I wonder if, and you can speculate a little bit, has the governor finally acquiesced to the dissident school lobbies in that the school districts should not have their budgets subject to oversight by city councils and by borough assemblies and whoever it may be? I am of the opinion that had the legislature done this properly, they would have not elected school board members. Because it puts the school board members in the position that they can look at the borough assembly and say, we can do whatever we damn well please, we're elected just like you are. That doesn't solve anything and hasn't solved anything. And as you've noticed, year after year after year, there's a fight between school boards and assemblies or whoever has the oversight over how much money a school district needs for that particular year. To speculate a little further, why is the governor doing this? He's told us that he's not going to run for office, not run for governor again, that he has to leave the state, but that he wants to return. It would appear to me, and I'm only speculating, and I may be unfair, but I'm going to speculate that possibly he may want to return to run for office again, governor, congressional office. And what better legacy to leave to himself than to have a block of votes supported by school lobbies, subsistence people, to come back to as a base to start with. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Questions at all? I do want to thank you for some of the going back to the constitutional amendment. You had mentioned the fighting between like the assembly and the school board. I just want you to know that my wife was on the school board while I was on the assembly, and somehow we still hacked it. But we had some good discussions.
To answer Senator Adams' question that he asked earlier, I'm opposed to any constitutional amendment in regard as it's being proposed or as even as you amended to be proposed, because I don't think it's necessary. The schools are adequately taken care of by the Constitution.
Senator Jones, according to the Constitution and your belief what it says, do you think the school board is an extension of the legislature? Or does it stand by itself as a local entity?
It stands by itself as a local entity. At least that's what they've always told us. That's what the school board members have always told us.
I just wondered, because it was the responsibility of the state legislature to fund school facilities and the school system in the state of Alaska. It seems that also goes through then that the school board must be somehow connected to the state legislature.
I disagree. I think that the school board, as they've always told us, they're elected locally, and they stand alone as a school board in the community. And the legislature is really a munificent granddaddy that they can turn to and look for funds. But I don't think that they are an extension of the legislature in that regard.
I believe, and I may be wrong, I believe that at any given time, if the legislature wants to abolish the school board, we have the power to do so.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Then you have right. So we do have that. If we're not satisfied, we can eliminate school boards if we want to stay worse.
That's right.
And take it over ourselves.
But not for little.
Yeah, but I'm sure
right.
You don't want to.
We don't want to do that.
Okay.
Point out that Jim is one of the two surviving members of the Constitutional Convention who is not vested in the retirement system, because we never recognized our constitutional delegates in that regard, even though he served on the Alcohol Beverage Control Commission and the state office.
Thank you. Sue Wilkin.
Thank you.
I put on the sheet that I was representing the State Board of Education, but also myself, because I've been involved in this previous to when I was a State Board of Education member. Although with all the preceding comments, I feel like I ought to have a hearing of my own to answer questions of all the myths that I supposedly believe in, which I don't think I do. But going back to before I was appointed a State Board of Education member, I was involved in the creation of the Alaska Coalition for Education. And at that time, I was an officer in the Alaska PTA. The coalition was conceived at that time to be put together of three groups. It was the Alaska PTA, of which there are 18,000 members in the states, and the State Board of Education and the Alaska Association of School Boards, all of which we felt did not have a vested interest in education other than being advocates for children, because none of us, our livelihood does not depend upon funding for education. It was through the proposal of this group that we proposed to the governor that we set up some kind of stable funding for education, because those of us that are involved locally at budgeting time for education, it is pretty much an 8 or 9 month process from the time you start on your citizens review committees all the way through the hearings of the school boards, through the hearings of the assemblies, right up until the moment we hear how much money is going to come from the state. And then if it's not what we guessed it was, then you go back to the hearing process again, only to have a couple month break and then start the process all over again. So for many parents, it's a real frustrating, significant time. It was stated earlier that money doesn't make for a wonderful education, doesn't guarantee it, and I think we all know that. But giving money, more money, isn't even the issue that we're talking about here. Because when the proposal was conceived, it was certainly not the intent of anybody that even talked about it that this was going to fully fund education. I mean, basically, it's sort of the same as saving for the future of your own children's education. We never dreamed it would be the full pot of money, nor would it be an endless supply of money. And when we talked about it being part of the dividend permanent fund and people having money taken from their dividends, I guess that was a part of us thinking that everyone in the state should take part in this kind of a legacy of saving for the education of children. A lot of times it's brought up about the accountability portion and schools being held accountable, because throwing money at them does not make things better. In my time on the State Board of Education, I have chaired the Outcomes Committee, and we've spent 2 years researching what other states have done in order to improve education. We've also learned by a lot of the mistakes that other states made by throwing themselves into various reforms that haven't worked out. One nice thing about Alaska is that we can take an overall view of what other states are doing, and we can certainly learn from those mistakes. But on the other hand, Alaska is also great for trying to reinvent the wheel. So we have to kind of do both, because we also are very unique because of our local control situation. The State Board has come out with a set of outcomes that is now out as far as the statistical information. And I guess what we are looking for is basically a vehicle for stable funding. If amendments were made to this proposal, I don't really think that anybody from the education would find fault in it, but we do find that we feel that this needs to go to a vote of the people. And my latest input on surveys is that we aren't way behind the eight ball. And I think that if this is passed on to go on to the ballot, it'll continue the debate for education. And this proposal, until November, if it doesn't pass through, I can pretty much guarantee it'll be the end of the debate for education. And I think that the debate is healthy. I think what's coming out of the discussion with people is extremely healthy. And the more communities get involved in the discussion, is only a plus for education.
Senator Jones.
So, if this doesn't pass, this doesn't happen, where do you think education is going to end up?
Well, we'll be right back to where we are, and when funds do decrease, certainly there will be other avenues that will be looked at, taxes for one. You know, that's the name of the game, and I think that's going to happen even in the long run with the funds we're probably going to end up having to reinstitute taxes.
You feel that education will still be the number one priority in the legislature and in the state?
Well, I think it should.
It is now.
Senator Alderson. What criteria do you think this endowment fund should hold? Should we only be looking at K-12? Does it encompass early childhood, the university system, school debt service, school construction? In your mind, what is this, the criteria for the endowment fund?
Well, I see it as a K-12 education.
Just stay with that a little bit. What about maintenance of school? The reason I ask that is it depends upon where you go. In some cases,
that's
the
true.
School district does, in other cases, the borough. So now you get into that area. Is maintenance or is it not? If it is, then I would suspect the borough then will kick it off over to the school because the state's going to pick it up through the, another program. But that's one of the areas that some of us are concerned about. We did get tested when it said preschool, very, very important. We had some that say it should be cradle school, you know, 0 to 6th grade. Some even recommended university, that the university should be in, so that we make a strong mandate for the total education package. So, but you feel it's strictly the K-12, people transportation would be left outside of that?
I don't know.
That's
I'm talking about the package of money that we were talking about, like I said, is it wasn't even dreamed of that it was going to be the full funding package. It's an amount of money set aside that is a start towards education. Nowhere in year 2005 or 2010 is $600 million or whatever it is now going to fund education. It's just not going to happen. So there's going to have to be more money, whether all those things are tagged on as a package and we decide to go out with the money. There's going to have to be more money put into it. If we say it's going to meet all those needs, I don't think it is.
Actually, following up on Senator Adams' question, I've been writing down the same sort of question. The Constitution says that no monies may be expended without appropriation by the legislature as well. And we do have a few leftover dedicated funds, some of them are contractual. We have the public school fund, for example. We appropriate that directly to the foundation formula. But presumably we could appropriate that money for special education or for some other programs within the general education budget. Would you want to see these funds dedicated to a particular activity, or would you still feel that the legislature should have the responsibility for determining where in the general field of education that would go?
Well, I'm a believer that the foundation formula should be funded as a whole entity without special appropriations to special education or certain things.
You want to lump in school debt retirement, school bus transportation and all? How broad do you want to make it?
Well, that's a debate. But I think if we're going to hold school districts accountable and we're going to hold superintendents accountable, the easiest way to do that is the full funding of the foundation unit and then them deciding exactly where it goes within their own district, and those that come up deficient, that's the way to hold them accountable.
What happens then if we find a district or a superintendent to have misused public funds?
Well, then that's, you know, that's the part we're working on, and that has to be taken care of. There has to be some accountability measures. You can't withhold funds. You can't do that. You have to provide the education, and right now our criteria is either we withhold funds or we jerk the licensure of the superintendent.
We never withhold funds.
No, and you can't withhold the funds, so that leaves one.
Absolutely.
Any other questions? So you had mentioned, you know, full funding for the foundation unit, and maybe, quite frankly, I think that that's an overplayed, not by you, but everybody. They come to us and they say, full funding of the unit, and right now we're having schools saying the unit's not fair. They want to go in and look at the unit again, and maybe it's not, because there is some real concern as to whether or not it is equitable. So you have that, and let me ask you, what's wrong with the trust, by law, setting up a trust that we can put money, just like the Science Foundation, or a foundation, without going to work with people?
No, when we first started this thing 2.5 years ago, we were looking for a vehicle. And the governor's proposal came forth as that vehicle. Other things have been presented through the legislature, and they've gotten shot down continually, mainly because it's usually not on the merits, it's on the political baggage of the author. So, yeah, you know that. I guess we were just looking for some kind of a vehicle, and this is the best vehicle, as far as we are concerned, that has come along. That's not to say we wouldn't look at anything else.
So the voting, because I was going to try to trap you and say, if you feel that strong about voting, then why not vote on the school budget in each community? And all of a sudden, the educational community says, oh my God, don't do that.
Yeah.
And you say, well, why not? If voting is that important. So you're not hung up on that something has to be there to vote on, if we can figure another way out.
Right now, this is the best vehicle that's there, and I want to vote on it. Now, if there's something else that's down the pipe, then so be it. But so far, 2.5 years.
Okay. And I'm glad you understand what we'll be voting on. Thanks, Sue. Mr. Andrews?
I need the copies of this.
Thank you.
My name is Mike Andrews. I live at 408 Haynes Avenue in Fairbanks. I've got 4 school-age children, and I serve on the State Job Training Coordinating Council, and I work in the private sector. I support the education endowment and urge your passage to the next committee referral because Alaskans have a right to make a choice on 2 issues embodying this resolution. First and most important is, do we want a fund that ensures our ability to offer future Alaskans quality education? The second issue is, what purpose permanent fund learning should be applied to, if at all. I don't buy the self-centered dialogue that the education endowment is a raid on the permanent fund. Alaska's Constitution gives us a mission of providing for education. At this time, the real raid on the fund is by the federal government, and they tax our earnings as a result of deception and dividends. I know I can't afford higher education for my kids on a weekly paycheck basis. I can't even be sure I'll be here to provide for them when the time comes. My family is fortunate because our children's dividend can be saved in an interest-bearing account for future education. Less fortunate Alaskans must use their dividends for immediate needs, and some use their checks to go on vacation. Who will pay for their offspring's education? Most likely taxpayers through increased property tax, user fees, and an income tax on all of us. Nor do I believe that a bank account for general education is a license that allows public education to feed at the public trough. Those people we call the proud American tradition of public education, where sons and daughters of rich and poor are afforded educational opportunities in our democracy. The education endowment will not ensure employees increases in pay and benefits, or administrators higher salaries, or public entities to misuse funds, because each school district has a check and balance system, a school board to oversee those areas. Each must meet the Alaska procurement codes. Each has a written policy for labor relations with a bargaining process. Each has a group of concerned constituents to watchdog the process. I would rather save dollars now in a separate account to fuel the education industry of our state than have my children taxed to the poorhouse to pay for my grandchild's education. Education is a clean industry that has long-term involvement with our youth, whose employees have stable jobs and livable wage that enhances every community in the state economically and socially. Beyond the rhetoric attached to any permanent fund issue, Alaskans recognize the need for proper stewardship and management of resources for continuing quality education in our state. It is time for you to help us lift our hearts and minds above the don't touch my permanent fund check issue. it's time for our communities to find a way to quit stepping past dollars for dimes where we bash education employees and raise property taxes for short-term goals when we have a tremendous renewable resource in the permanent fund. The education endowment is the best of both worlds, secure funding for future education, and we still get a sizable permanent fund dividend every year. This is a quality of life issue for the next generation of Alaskans, and I see no more bright horizon for us than finding a way to invest in our children, our human resources, through stable education funding. Your choice is before you. Do you choose to fund education? Do you allow citizens to vote on the best use of the permanent fund earnings? That's my opinion.
Any questions at all?
Two things. One is you're talking about, you're asking this committee, I guess, to pass it on to the next committee referral. This will not go to the next committee referral unless we agree. In other words, we're not, and as chairman, I'm not going to just take something because somebody says, well, this is the governor's idea, and just shove it out. I think we have an obligation to the people to make it the best possible thing that we, at least in this committee, feel. The other, what do you mean each school district has to check the balance?
Well, in my opinion, you know, I know in this town there's an awful lot of public input to the budget process, to the watchdogging the contracts that get allowed, etc. You know, there's laws there, so everybody has an opportunity to see things up on the table, hands on the table type of situations. I think that through that, through elected members of the school board, etc., that we have an ability to protect our education interests.
Any other questions? Thank you. Nancy Thomas.
Thank you for providing me the opportunity to address you today. My name is Nancy Thomas. I address you on behalf of my husband, Lauren, and myself. Our residence is at 1006 Cheely Hill Drive, Fairbanks, 99709. And our mailing address is P.O. Box 61436, Fairbanks, 99706. We have two children who are both employed in the private sector, and like many others in the state, have been adversely affected by the downturn of the economy when the recession hit in 1986. Like them, we have survived and learned that we must all plan for the day when the size of government spending is scaled down and can no longer provide something to everyone. Of all the things that government provides, nothing is as important as a good education. My husband and I know we both speak from personal experience. I am from a poor family. At the age of 13, I became pregnant. I chose to keep my child, but didn't do what my parents wanted me to do, which was to drop out of school and go on welfare. Instead, I dropped out of school and married an abusive man. The marriage did not last long. In order to support my child, my baby daughter, and myself, I was forced to walk to work in the cold Anchorage winters. Fortunately, I met my husband, Dorn. We married when I was 17. Like me, he had come from a large, poor family. Unlike me, he had been taught that a good education was something to be valued and enable you to have a better life than what your parents had, and hopefully make life better for your children. With his encouragement and support, I was able to get my GED, which enabled me to get a good job. Neither my husband nor I had a college education, although we both have taken some classes. Dorn adopted my daughter, and we also have a son. Our 15-year-old daughter is not in the circumstances that I was, because personal determination and luck and black enabled me to break the cycle of poverty. At the age of 15, I was an uneducated single parent, whereas she is on the honor roll and has been selected to be a foreign exchange student. She is a bright, intelligent person who is determined to go to college and do something with her gift of language and mathematics. She is an educator's dream. Our son, on the other hand, has not had it so easy. He is a happy, intelligent child, but has a learning attention disorder. Unfortunately, because he was a chubby, affable little boy, the school did not spot his problem. My husband and I were at odds with the school over his problems. Finally, we took matters into our own hands and took him to a doctor. Once the problem was identified, his learning program was modified to suit his needs. He, with our help and his teachers, is now living up to his excellent potential. What you ask is the point of all this? The point is that the system may be imperfect, but the goal is worth fighting for. The goal is equality education, whereby each child can grow and learn. It is a joint effort between the parents and the schools. It means that we are jointly responsible for the successes and failures of our children. Had I had that, I might not have become pregnant at 13. Conversely, had our daughter and son not had it, they, like others, could have been caught up in the cycle of poverty. My husband and I are not comfortable being this candid about our lives, but we felt it important that you understand why we feel so strongly about the need for a stable source of funding for education. We understand that the education fund may not be sufficient to fully fund the future needs of education, but it is the correct start. We know that we will not have permanent fund dividends as large as they would be without it, but we submit that we lived when we didn't have dividend checks. We even lived here when we paid taxes in order to support government. We will make whatever necessary adjustments that we will need to when the time comes that we can no longer afford the luxury of no-cost state government. That is what life is all about, enjoying the good times but planning and being prepared for the rough times that are just around the corner. It is also about being responsible for future generations, for the grandchildren we hope to have. We urge you to vote for the children of tomorrow, not just the residents of today. Demonstrate you are the leaders we tell our children you are. Pass this important resolution and cast a vote for the future of our children. Allow each of us to a chance to vote on this in November.
Let's have a couple. Do you think GED should be part of the foundation, or part of the endowment?
Yes, definitely. You do? It enabled me to go forward and get a good job.
Okay, so that would be covered. The talk about permanent funds, and people say have problems now even living. And you feel it's more important to put the money into a foundation and allow them to have some that extra dividend money that maybe for survival, maybe for the kid that's going to college. I'm playing devil's advocate. People going to college, just maybe that check, maybe the difference of going and not going. So you feel that K-12 is more important than worrying about those kinds of things?
Well, the education needs to be there to get people to where they have a job, so they can go out and get a job, so they're not in the poverty level. The education needs to be there for them, the availability of it. If you don't have funding for the education.
And you're only playing the devil's advocate again. Mm-hmm. I don't know of any time in the period of the state that the legislature itself did not place education as a top priority. And I would guess if you had a bet, that's a safe bet, it's going to be that way forever. I just can't see the legislature not placing education as really number one. And even now, the school districts all say, oh, what are we getting for the foundation unit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and they're worried. So, it's a pretty safe bet that at least what the unit was last year you'll get. And, you know what I mean? So it's not that uncertainty too much anymore like some people think it is. I think it's pretty safe. If I were a school board member, I wouldn't worry. I would definitely bet at least what we got last year. So I think we do take pretty good care of it. But I appreciate your testimony and sharing some of your personal life. Okay, thank you. I'm going to goof up on this one. Kauf, I'll just give you your first name. How's that?
Thank you. Thank you very much. So my name is Kauf Jairobi. I live on 344 Hester Drive, Fairbanks, Alaska. Mailing address is Post Office Box, 84104, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701. I'm not an expert on the state constitution. In the sense that I do not know very much about the details of that, nor do I know essentially how to write one of these documents, so I am really not helped in that way. But I consider myself part of that coalition that recommended the establishment of an education endowment. I'm a parent, my wife and I have three children, and I'm very fortunate that both of them utilize the benefits of the state education system, and the third one is now at the time using it. So they have made good use of the education system. I'm an educator in the sense that I have taught at the University of Alaska Fairbanks for 20 years, and before that for 5 years at the University of Sri Lanka, which is formerly known as Ceylon. Right now I'm an administrator. I became the dean of the College of Natural Sciences here about 5-6 years ago. And I consider my major duty as a dean is to provide the best quality education for the students that enroll in the class. Like to do that, what I do is to try to create an environment that would be very conducive for these individuals to provide that kind of quality education. And unfortunately, I was a part of the administration when we had the budget crunch in 1986. And that gave me a great view of what will happen when we go into a situation of a budget problem. And what I did was, of course, to start looking at various other systems and started reading a lot about these things. And I found that there's one aspect one can really devote, say that going to do the education is the stability. stability, both political and financial, is absolutely paramount if we were to have a substantial educational system in the state and in the university, in my, for me, in any country. If you look at the countries right now, South America is a very good example. When there are instability, education system is shambles. So is the Middle East. And even in my own country, Sri Lanka at this time, my former country, where when it was stable, we had a very good education system. Now it is racial communal stripes are going on, the education system is shambles. I personally had a tragedy. My brother-in-law, who was chancellor of one of the universities, got assassinated because he spoke out for the good of the education system. So you can say that when the country is unstable, you are going to get problems with the education system. Now, fortunately, thank God for that, the United States and the state of Alaska has political stability, which I do not doubt at all. I think the framers of the Constitution and the vision and the foresight to establish a system that will give this country a political stability that no other country could ever have. But on the other hand, can we ask the same question for the financial stability, even in the United States, and especially in the state of Alaska? I believe that we have a reasonable doubt to expect some instability in the financial system within the next 20 years. I'm trying to say is that perhaps we will discover oil fields, we will have a diversified economy where the things will be very good, or we will continue in the state we have. But the question is that I believe very strongly that there is a possibility, even a slight possibility, reasonable possibility that we may have financial instability in the state. Now, why education? I believe education is primary purpose is to develop human resources. I mean, that's the major purpose of purpose of education. And even Jefferson said that when the Constitution was amended, the survival of the democratic system is going to depend on a proper education system. And he laid it down and established the University of Virginia. Now, when I was a schoolboy back in Sri Lanka, my fathers and my elders used to say that if you amass material wealth, you're going to lose it by floods, robbers, hurricanes, monsoons, and anything. But there's one wealth you will never, ever, only God can take away. That is a good education. And I think that was something that has stuck in my mind. I tell my children about that too. I tell our students too. If you have a good education system, you are going to get a very good way of life. I was able to survive in Alaska. I became very successful in this state. I think that is because I had a very good education system. And I want to show you one demographical data that I collected in 1987. There are all kinds of things in here about what is happening, and a profile of 25 million U.S. adults who dropped out of high school. One of the most telling things is that 80% of our prisoners in our jails are high school dropouts. Each one costs us $24,000 a year. A college student costs us only $3,400. So I think what maybe you as the leaders of the state should consider what can be done if we have even a reasonable doubt that the education system is not going to be as good as we want or we have at this time. So I urge you to let this put on a ballot and let the people decide whether it should be the highest priority in the state and how we should establish a steady source of funding to make the education system survive. Thank you.
Any question?
No question.
No, thanks. Jerry McPhee.
I'm Jerry McBeth. I live at 1777 Red Box Drive. I'm on the school board for my second term, and I'm this year's president of the Fairbanks and Scarborough Board of Education. I'd like to speak to two points. The first is stability of funding in education. The second is support for the education endowment proposal, as reflected in the recent survey done by the school district. When I first ran for office in 1986, our school system in Fairbanks was in a bit of a crisis situation fiscally because the governor's endowment, the governor's impoundment of funds, 10% of funds, left us in a deficit of $4 million. And during my first 9 months on the board, all issues we faced had to be considered from a fiscal perspective. And it took us 9 months to develop a budget that was balanced. That event took the state of Alaska as a whole by surprise. The drop in oil prices occasioned Governor Sheffield to inbound funds. It also made us aware that given our high dependence on oil revenues, fluctuations in oil prices, the oil market in general, that those of us concerned with education and supply-based services have to look at and consider special witness and providing stability. If we had an education endowment in 1986, I suspect that the problems we went through in Fairbanks and elsewhere in the state would have been far less severe. I'm not sure we would have had no problems, but Senator Jones, you've asked the question about the difference that the education endowment would make. It would provide a stable floor of funding in the event that there were crisis situations, unusual events, such as a major drop in oil prices or some other resource on which we're highly dependent, would enable those making policy decisions and providing educational services and other services at the local level to do so in an environment of some stability. Because of the situation we went through in 1986 and 1987, I believe that the attitude of the Board of Education has been one especially appreciative of any attempt to provide stability in education funding. We did, as other boards throughout the state, endorse the concept of the education fund, the education endowment, 2 years ago. And last year, in September 1989, we endorsed the governor's education endowment. We did so unanimously. The State School Board Association meeting in Anchorage last November also endorsed specifically the governor's education endowment proposal. I think, again, an audience of 200 or 300 school board members from throughout the state, there were only 3 or 4 hands raised in opposition to that proposal. That was the first point I wanted to address. The second was attitudes in Fairbanks toward the governor's proposal for the education endowment. There was a hearing I attended here a couple of months ago on the future of the permanent fund. The audience was filled with individuals who were, in my view, and characterizing them very unflatteringly, very mean-spirited individuals with respect to education and the endowment proposal particularly. They were not, in my view, representative of this community. We do community surveys here as one means of informing us on education programs and support for them. We did a survey last December and January, where 400 Fairbanksans selected randomly, who represented, I believe, the community quite well, were asked several questions, one of which is how they would propose to increase revenues for the purpose of supporting education. Their answers, and they were presented with these choices: the governor's endowment, state income tax, used dividend check, sales tax, increased property tax, statewide school tax, request for funds from the borough, and other. The first choice, 31% gave us their first choice, the governor's endowment, giving us first choice state income tax for 15%, dividend checks 6%, sales tax 17%. I can read down the list, but the single most preferred alternative for Fairbanks respondents to this community survey was the governor's endowment. And those, if we combine the first, second, and third choices, we have the total of some 56 or 57% of the respondents.
Regarding President, what was the percentage? You had mentioned the permanent fund itself. What was that?
Used dividend checks.
Yes.
I think it was a question. I should find the correct wording of this question. That was my first choice was 6%.
Six. Okay. And the only reason I asked that is because I think what I'm hearing from some of these earlier people, that's the thing, is if anything is going to kill the proposal, because only 6% suggested that. And the perception, right or wrong, is that that's what you're doing with the proposed endowment right now. Okay, that's
the government endowment was explained to people as a proposal that would set aside the permanent fund monies to interest revenues of which would be used to fund education. I would then suggest that if Fairbanks voters were presented the option of the governor's endowment, and it were fully explained that there is the possibility for support for them. In other words, I would not, and I think that there is a negative climate in this town for a number of years with respect to supporting public services. I would not say that such a proposal would instantly be moving down to defeat. In other words, this is something that can be taken to the voters and can be explained. And there can be a debate and discussion about it, a debate and discussion which might be quite healthy. Because it does focus on the overall purposes and goals of education. That's all.
If you're looking for stability of education funds, don't you think it would be better for all school districts in the state of Alaska to go after legislation for early funding of education by February 1st from the legislature, so you can do budgets?
Well, I'm not in direct response to the question, the school board statewide had supported early funding for education. But if you're asking whether early funding for education replaces a need for some endowment, that I don't believe that it would.
Well, my reason behind this, if you even deposit the money in a year, the $500 million, it will take some time at a 10% interest, say, for that fund to be able to help education as it does presently.
No, clearly, I mean, there is support from the school board statewide for early funding education.
I have a question on, you said proposal were to go out and about and fully explain. How do you perceive it being fully explained?
Well, I think the one way in which things are fully explained is by having wide-ranging public discussion. Television shows, radio shows, special hearings. And then a second way is by asking in the public office to take positions. If this goes on the November ballot, then we'll already have influenced municipal elections statewide in October. And candidates for the legislature will be taking positions on it as well. So that in that process, I believe that the various ramifications close to different.
How would you fund, I mean, it's easy, the governor has the money, he can just go out and do his thing, but how do you fund the other side so you get fully implemented the proposal? How would you propose that the opponents, for example, Earl Freeman, Jay Hemp, mayors of Democrat and Republican, both really oppose this thing. How do they get money, that side of the coin, to go out and say, no, wait a minute, there's another side to this issue? Because the governor has money, I mean, he can go out and do it, he doesn't have to go raise it. How would you do that?
Well, first, I don't believe that the governor would be able to use a great deal of money to blitz the state. I doubt if you think you've got $1.5 to $10 million in such a big price, and so we're talking about a smaller change. It's the nature of discretionary funds available to the governor. Now, an opposition group could find funding very easily through our process right now, requesting donations from the public. We have a number of groups that have formed on statewide issues as well as local issues, and we've got lots of money.
The difference is, though, in one case it's public funds, in the other case it's voluntary. And if you have public funds at your disposal, for example, every hearing that we've had so far, the governor had an advanced person go out there two ahead of time to get people to come to hear. I think you need to know that. And I don't know about Fairbanks, whether this happened up here or not, but it did in every other hearing we've had. But the other side, so to speak, did not have the funds to go out and get, quote, their side of this proposal to a public hearing. So that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. And this may be not a fair.
Again, what I do for a living is I teach politics, research and philosophy politics. And I wouldn't be fearful of a lack of criticism of the outcome. I think that the governor would have to be very careful in screening his future use of funds in support of the proposal, given public interest.
Yeah, there is real concern because he already produced the material. You can get. He already produced printed material. But you don't get the other side. And I guess there are some that really believe in fairness. And in order to be fair, you really have to show both sides. The election pamphlet itself will give both sides a shot. And how many people read the whole pamphlet, I don't know. But you would agree, I think, that if you make the governor make a small amount of money, say $50,000 available, it should be a mechanism for the other side to get $50,000 from the public treasury also. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't. I think that's what you'd rather do in terms of my state of the process.
Well, this is unique to me, then.
So this happened at the time of the government funding its creation in 76. I don't recall that there was any money set aside for those who opposed the idea of getting funds for the president.
I don't know, and I think at that time, and I'm not sure at that time how much state funds, if any. If somebody like one of us goes around and does our own thing, that's one thing. But when you start spending money for bought TV time, bought this and that, then it is. I'm saying this is what other people are concerned about. And I think probably first you figured would have had concern. It's a little bit hard for me. Okay, thanks. Carol Evans?
I'm Carol Evans, and I live at 1212 Farmersfish Road, and I have listed that I'm speaking for myself, but I must tell you that I'm also president of the Fairbanks Education Association, and we have taken a formal position in support of the endowment. I appreciate your interest in finding out how your constituents feel about HJR 13, and I am speaking in favor of taking it to the voters to make that decision. Education is widely acknowledged as our top priority. And with healthy oil revenues, we've grown accustomed to receiving benefits and paying nothing for them. But with declining revenues in the future, we face a situation where we will not be able to provide the needed funds for quality education in our state. There may be many ways to solve the problems. For sure, we could reinstitute the income tax and start generating revenue that way, but H.J. R. 13 is another way. As I understand the plan for the education fund, the interest money from the earnings would begin now, but for 15 years, that money would, in the long-range plan, as I understand it, would oil bubble whatever and create its own interest. And at that time, in the year 2005, that money would kick in. And for those of you who feel that this is being supported only by teachers and parents who have a vested interest, I would say that we need to look beyond that line of reasoning. I support a plan that will ensure future funding for education. I am a teacher, but in 15 years, I will be retired. I think most teachers who are supporting this plan, I mean, most parents who have parents who have children in school will no longer have children in school in 15 years. And for sure, you politicians will have moved on to something else. You'll be retired at that time. However, the need for educational funding will still be there. As retired citizens, we will face a whole new list of problems in 15 years. And won't it be good to know that we were a part of a solution that will provide for education and that our number one priority will be secure? It is imperative that we put a plan into place that will protect the future of education. Please look beyond the next budget, trust the projections that have been done, and use your positions and the responsibility that has been placed in your hands to protect the future. I urge you to allow the citizens of this state to make the decision about setting aside a portion of the earnings of the permanent fund to support education in the future. Please move this piece of legislation out of your committee, and I would urge you to support putting it on the ballot.
Any questions? Carol, I have one.
Okay.
This Senator Duncan isn't here, but he always brings this up to every meeting. He has a concern, I think other legislators do, that when you tie, like right now, I mean, basically you're tying half of the earnings up with dividends, and you're not going to wipe that out. I mean, we all know that. Okay, and you're taking, say, 10% for inflation. Now we're taking the other 40%, locking it up constitutionally here. What happens if some of the economists are right? 5 years from now, you have a tremendous drop in oil, and there's nowhere to get extra money. Everything's locked up. How do you handle that? Because education, if that happens, may suffer because there is no money. Let's say that the price of oil goes down like it was before, and there is no money. This foundation is going to be producing at that time, I don't know, $50 million. It's not near enough because you're going to need at that time probably $700 million. So then what happens? Now you've locked everything up. There's no flexibility by the legislature to get any more.
You're saying it's locked up because it's in the fund,
yes,
and
constitution.
And we're planning not to use those earnings.
Unless you change the constitution, you'd have to go back again to vote. What do you do that fiscal year if we were forced in that dilemma that all of a sudden the income drops by 30%?
Sooner than we anticipated to drop.
Yes.
Well, we would for sure have a problem. Your problem solving skills would be used to the max, and we would have to go to the people. We would have to use taxes, we'd have to tap other funds. It would be a crisis, but I believe that we're going to have that crisis if we don't have something in place. And that's what's so frightening. If we don't have a fund in place, that's inevitable that will happen. It could happen sooner, but if we don't plan now with a permanent fund or something that is equivalent, something that will be generating funds, because we have to be generating, we can't just wait till the crisis is here and then ask the people to come forth with the tax money or school fund or whatever, you know, school taxes, income taxes, property taxes.
There's the economic thought out there that says in the year 2005 is when the problem is, because at that time, feeling, again, they're all theories, but the gas pipeline may be established, and according to Senator Stevens, that'll give the state $1 billion a year itself, so that there's that economic thought that says in the year 2005, my God, that's where we're going to be filthy rich anyhow. So you need to worry about before you get to that period. I don't know. But you would object to establishing a statutorily endowment or trust. You don't like that idea?
I'm in favor of doing whatever it takes to secure stable funding for education. And I think if you have a better way, you need a way. This seems to be a way, a good way. A lot of A lot of energy's gone into coming up with this plan, and it seems like a good solution to a problem.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Bonnie Barber.
Hi, my name is Bonnie Barber, and I live at 3198 Judge Arend Avenue in Fairbanks. I am a supporter of HJR 13, and I would like to read a letter from Grace Ann Peacock, who is a teacher in Fairbanks, who was unable to attend but has a great deal of interest in this issue. On past Tuesday evenings in March, Alaska citizens in urban school districts, fearful that declining revenue will force cuts in their favorite school programs, have crowded into school board meetings to testify on the need for a special program. Later in the budgeting process, they've made similar testimony to their borough assembly. Phone trees, letter writing campaigns, and other influencing strategies have been implemented until both the state and local government made their final decisions on school funding. In some years, this process has continued through June and July. Teachers of threatened programs and non-tenured teachers feel unappreciated and unsupported. Administrators cannot make and implement plans. The energy and focus of schools is disrupted. Learning is affected. Do these annual financing threats to the Alaska educational system make for quality and excellence in education? Do they make good use of parent, teacher, and administrator time and talent? Would a stable source of school funding better allow teachers and administrators to use their resources all year long, creating a productive and supportive work environment for teachers and desirable learning conditions and outcomes for students? As one who has been alarmed at the annual spring-summer drain of educational energy to the financing process, I believe that a stable source of school funding is desirable. The few years that funding was not problematic and thus rousing community support was not necessary, teachers, administrators, and parents could focus their full attention on quality education for students. They felt supported and valued for their work. This year, Alaskans have a very unique opportunity. If the Senate will approve the educational amendment for the November ballot, we will get to decide whether or not we would like to create an education permanent fund, a savings account that would fund education in the future when the oil revenues decline. As far as I know, no other state has ever or will ever have such an opportunity. We are unique in that we have so much oil-generated revenue that we can decide how to spend. Should citizens be active in this decision-making process? I say yes. In a decision of this importance, it is only right that we let the people decide. It's an opportunity for us to model responsible citizenship for our children. How better to teach students that by demonstration and involvement in decision making regarding important issues. Support putting HJR 13, the educational amendment, on the November ballot. A strong, vital democracy depends on an active, informed citizenry. Give us a chance, give us the vote, let the people decide.
Any questions? I just have one. You mentioned the spring drain. Do you see this as preventing the spring drain?
Well, again, I can't answer for Grace Ann. This is her letter. I think clearly the thought would be that there would be some stable funding there so that there would be an understanding that perhaps the whole budget, we'd have to go through the whole budget process in order to understand how much money education was going to have available to it. So the goal, obviously the goal would be for a knowledge of how much money would be available for education.
I think in practicality, being practical about things, by the time this kicks in, I say the budget's $1 billion for schools. Let's say you know that this is going to generate a half trillion. That big uncertainty still isn't going to be there. You're still going to have the spring drain, as you call it, or as she calls it. That's going to be there. Even now, there's nobody in this room that would say you're going to get nothing. So you can say, well, at least you're going to get even half. There's nobody. So you already have a stability built into the system. It's not the political system. You're going to get basically what you got last year as a starting point. Or even if you took it worse, a 10% cut. This won't even do that when it kicks in. You won't even get that. You may be guaranteed, say, 50%.